First of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me to this conference and the rest of the people here for attending and staying inside despite the nice weather outside. Two things I would like to talk about. These are problems related with electron properties of carbon nanotubes in the situation when periodic field is applied to drive electrons. And the other thing I'm going to discuss is the role of interactions in the system in the situation that we'll describe in more detail when a metallic nanotube is driven into a narrow gap semiconductor state by an external field. So, I mean, part of this work, as you will see, can be viewed as a proposal of an experiment, and Valery Talyansky from Cavendish Lab is the person who inspired that. And these are the issues that I'm going to talk about. So maybe let me put it here so you have a plan in front of you. So the first part will be about the possibility, we'll consider the possibility of using metallic nanotube to realize Tauless pump. So Tauless pump is basically the following idea. If I take a one-dimensional electron system, say in a quantum wire with parabolic dispersion relation, if I apply periodic potential to it, then mini gaps open at the energy at which right and left states are coupled by backscattering. And then if I take this periodic potential if I take electron density such that lowest mini band is filled and the upper part of the spectrum is empty, so the chemical potential inside this gap produced by periodic field, then if I take the periodic potential and slide, then this will induce current. This will drag electrons and will produce current, which will be quantized in the units of electron charge times the frequency with which I change my cosine potential with omega over 2 pi. That was proposed by Tauless. And it was considered from the point of view of, making a current standard, because this is a quantized current. Also, obviously, because one-dimensional electrons are interesting, that this could be used as a probe of one-dimensional electron physics. However, it turned out difficult to realize in conventional 1D systems such as quantum wires, basically for the following reason. If we have the periodic field we're going to use, whether it's optical, acoustical, or else, has wavelengths typically of order of micron. So by Bloch band filling condition, that means that we need to go to very low electron densities when we have about two electrons per period, and these densities quantum wire is not ballistic anymore. So the first experiment which quantized current was demonstrated was actually not using plane waves, but using electrons in quantum dots. There was an experiment in Delft group and then in Sinclair group where they used arrays of quantum dots operated on turnstile regime, and in that way they produced quantized current. But that's of course very different because their electrons are they are hopping incoherently between the dots, and moreover, it turns out that quantized current can only be obtained at relatively low frequencies, so that the maximal value of current one can get is in the picoamp range. So it is quantized, but rather low magnitude. So from theory point of view, of course, it is also interesting to have pumping using electrons in plane wave states rather than localized states, because that in that way we will be able to look at the one-dimensional electron physics. Why nanotubes? Let me just review briefly what has been already said by Charlie Kane in his talk about electron properties of nanotubes. If I take a nanotube, which is rolled from a graphite sheet, then electron spectrum of this one-dimensional system can be obtained from the two-dimensional electron system of a graphite sheet. And the procedure, roughly speaking, is that we have to take the two-dimensional band structure and then slice it in the k-space in the direction along the which the axis of the tube is oriented. And in that way, we get one-dimensional dispersion relation. And this one-dimensional dispersion relation will look very different depending on whether our lines along which we slice goes through or misses these band intersection points, which are all are exactly the band center in the energy scale. So what we get as a result is, so this is how it looks. We are choosing, depending on the geometry, which way nanotube is aligned, we can either have one-dimensional lines going through the points or of the points, and in that case, we get metallic or semiconducting nanotubes, and this is summarized here. So the one-dimensional electron spectrum will look like this for metallic case and like this for semiconducting case, and it has been. You can see from the procedure this we arrived at this one-dimensional metal that it is subtle because we obtained it from a two-dimensional semi-metal. So you can expect that by slight perturbation you can turn a metal in a semi-metal near these band crossing points. And indeed, if you apply parallel magnetic field along the nanotube, for instance, will induce flux through the nanotube, which will change periodic boundary condition for electron wave function to quasi-periodic, and essentially in the k space you'll move your lines along which you slice by a little bit, and that way you will miss the band crossing point, and because of that, small mini gaps will open here. Or another way, very nice way of turning metallic nanotubes in a narrow gap semiconducting was proposed by Charlie Kane which is based on the idea that curvature of the nanotube is a perturbation which is, as it turns out, for many orientations, for the majority of the orientation, is sufficient to open a small mini gap here. So that's basically the part of the information on electron properties we need to go on. So here is what we consider doing. Let's take a nanotube and apply our periodic electric field to it. And practically, this can be done by using surface acoustic waves in a piezoelectric acoustic field is accompanied by electric field, which is long range, so it goes out of the substrate and exists in vacuum. So if you place nanotube on a substrate, then electrons will be driven by electric field outside, and the wavelength of acoustic field can be down to micron or fraction of a micron, and the amplitude, depending on the substrate, can be up to volts. So we have this periodic electric field, and now the reason nanotubes are special is that if you go back to the Stahl's picture of backscattering between two different branches, you see that here you can have small momentum backscattering at high electron density because being natural semi-metals, nanotubes have bands intersecting exactly at the Fermi level. So if you have large wavelength like this, you can still backscatter from this right moving to this left moving branch. And electron density is large in these units by the ratio of kF to the wave number of the photon. So you, in principle, you can have a backscattering process like this. And the only, I guess, one of the subtleties is that the unless we open a small mini gap here, there is a selection rule due to the nature of electronic wave functions in one dimension as they come from two dimensions that protects electrons from backscattering. And as it turns out, that once a weak perturbation is applied, either magnetic field or just the curvature of the nanotube by itself, then this selection rule is no longer a good selection rule, and backscattering can occur in the vicinity slightly above or below the gap. And also because of rather high velocity in the nanotube, the energy gaps that we can produce in this way are going to be rather large, and one can crudely estimate this by comparing with this experiment in which standing waves in a finite size sample were observed, and the energy spacing between the levels was measured using Coulomb blockade experiment, and so from that we can expect that the gaps that we can have are as big as this energy spacing, and for a 1 micron sample that would be of order of few or millivolts, which is good. Right. So now let's calculate energy spectrum. The low energy states, as I already shown graphically, are described by a Dirac equation with a mass term, which corresponds to this small gap at the band crossing. I'm writing the equation only for right and left branches for one valley, and ignore branches with high energies and also branches and also the other valley, because that's the decoupled. So this is the equation to use, and this is the perturbation that restores the left and right mixing, and it can be, as I said, produced by magnetic field or by a curvature. And this problem can be solved very easily explicitly. If this perturbation is small, then I can just, then this is what I should actually do, a gauge transformation to eliminate this term, and then delta acquires a phase, and then if I expand it in Fourier series, I can take one of the harmonics and argue that this harmonic in the two-wave matching approximation will open a mini gap of the amplitude equal to the harmonic. So we predict energy gaps which will look like this. So as you see, they will oscillate as Bessel functions, as a function of the amplitude of the perturbation. And now if we do the same problem not in the perturbation theory but explicitly numerically, we find energy spectrum which is blue here as a function of the field amplitude, and you see that there are energy gaps which behave more or less like Bessel functions. So they oscillate and they collapse at the points which are close to the nodes of Bessel functions. So from that we can use this to estimate the gaps that we get in the strong coupling regime, and indeed what I said about the possibility to have gaps up to 10 millivolts seems to be right. So the nice thing about having mini gaps close to Fermi level is that now we can start from a nanotube which in naturally is half filled, and then by small doping change the chemical potential so we go up and align the chemical potential one of the mini gaps, and then we get the quantized current from Talos calculation, which in this case will be 4 times an integer times electron charge time frequency, and 4 is because we have the same transport happening in each of the valleys, and each of the valleys also spin generated. So the interesting thing here is that the sign of the current will actually depend on whether we change electron density so that it's electron doped or hole doped. And if it's electron doped, the current will be induced along the field. If it's hole doped, it will be opposite to the field, positive and negative M's. Also, the plateaus, the quantized current plateaus as a function of amplitude, should scale, like in quantum Hall effect, should scale roughly as a function of the gap. So the quantized plateaus width should oscillate like the gaps I was showing in the previous view graph. So from the theory point of view, so this is as far as the non-interacting problem goes. Now there are several issues here which should be considered, which are interesting theoretically. One is the role of electron interactions. And as we'll see after the second part of the talk, we'll be able to apply the results here, if we have time, that electron interactions enhance energy gaps. And then disorder is a less, the role of disorder is probably not so well understood. There is a paper by Talas and Neil, which by making analogy with the diabetic transport calculation of the whole of the diabetic calculation of the diabetic calculation demonstration of the whole quantization, argues that in the one-dimensional case the diabetic transport will be robust with respect to weak disorder, and that's where the literature is. Okay, so let me now switch to the problem, to the other problem, or maybe, if you like, let me take some questions on the first part, if there are any. Good.
How is the momentum transferred to the electrons for the running
beam? Bragg scattering? Electron states are plane waves and they scatter. So now I'm going to consider basically the same situation, the metallic, nominally metallic tube, which is brought into this narrow gap state by applying a small perturbation. And this state is interesting from the point of view of electron interactions, because we, by perturbation, we switch from a metal to a dielectric. So it's nice to see it in the free Fermi system, but in the interacting system, we should go through it more carefully and see whether the energy, how much the energy gaps that we obtain in the interacting system differ from what we have in the non-interacting system. And the interactions in one dimension is well known as strong, so we have to use our Lachenz liquid theory of some in some form. And so what I'm going to talk is, first I'm going to consider half field state and talk about excitation spectrum using Bose-Nice Lachenz liquid theory. And after we talk about excitation spectrum, we'll talk about what happens if we are at finite doping a little bit above the gap. And how the energy of the system behaves as a function of density, and then consider some possibilities to observe these effects using Coulomb blockade measurement. So we start from one-dimensional interacting electrons, and this is the one-dimensional Hamiltonian that I wrote so far without this right-left breaking perturbation, and this is electron interaction. Now, this can be viewed as a Lachenz liquid, and there have been extensive studies of this, and the most important thing for me that I would like to refer to in this literature is the observation of Kane, Balance, and Fisher, that because of a large radius of the nanotube in the units of interatomic spacing, the only important there is a small parameter by which I can keep the forward scattering amplitude in Lachenz liquid, or just long-range electron interaction, and ignore other processes such as backscattering and umklapp. They may lead by themselves. They may lead to an intrinsic gap appearing at half filling due to backscattering, for instance. However, I will assume, because this intrinsic gap can be estimated to be small in this parameter, that we apply the perturbation that is larger than this intrinsic gap. So we are where the energy is higher than what would be the intrinsic gap in the absence of externally induced gap. Okay, so in that case, it seems okay to drop backscattering in Unklab, and then I just have a Lattice-Sharpe liquid with a pure forward scattering, which is a well-known exactly solvable problem, the one that Tomonaga solved originally. And it's just, you know, the only complication here is that there are four species, or in this case, because of two valleys and spin. So, but I can still bosonize, obtain quadratic Hamiltonian, diagonalize it by using usual orthogonal transformation. And these will be the variables in which the Hamiltonian is diagonal. So phi node will be the charge mode, and phi 1, phi 2, phi 3 will be Zuda spin modes, which include both both spin and valley components. And so this will be the quadratic Hamiltonian in which there will be one very rigid charge mode. This is the forward scattering of Coulomb interaction, and the basically non-interacting spin modes. The perturbation in this case that scatters right and left looks like this, and when I bosonize, I get cosine term. So we need to now look for the spectrum of energy excitations. And what we'll do is the standard scaling analysis first. We'll consider Rg on this problem at the high energies at which this perturbation is small. Then I only need to consider Gaussian part and use it to renormalize the cosine perturbation. And then once I go to the scale at which perturbation is not small, I will look for soliton solutions of the Sine-Gordon problem. So what we find, just you know, as a preview, we find that there are two kinds of excitations which have different energy scales. There are charged excitations and neutral excitations. And charged excitations have large gap, and spin excitations, also neutral excitations, have smaller gap, smaller by this parameter, which is the Coulomb interaction, we'll see later. And so I will mainly focus on the charge excitations. However, I will mention that because there is a large energy scale between charged and neutral excitations, one can use that to construct an effective theory that describes only neutral excitations by integrating out charge excitations, and that leads to, surprisingly, to an exactly solvable Gross-Nevers model for which the excitation spectrum is known from exact solutions. And there is some similarity here with this well-known paper by Lynn Balance and Fisher about the high symmetry that one gets in a two-leg ladder problem. And we can discuss later maybe the similarities and differences. But for now, I would like to talk about charge excitations. So as I said, I will use Gaussian renormalization to study scaling of this cosine perturbation, and this is how it renormalized. There is a scaling exponent of 3/4 because one mode, the charge mode, doesn't fluctuate in the limit when it's very rigid, and only 3 or 4 modes fluctuate. And because of that, I can estimate, I have a power law I have this power law for the coupling constant, and then I can determine the correlation length at which perturbation grows and becomes large, becomes comparable to the quadratic term, as usual by this equation. And then at scales lower than that, I don't have to consider quantum fluctuations because they're frozen out. So the energy of a soliton I can then find just by variational analysis. I can consider a soliton in which the phi field varies from 0 to 2 pi, and I will show it in the next few graph. And then the elastic energy and the cosine energy are written down here, and if I minimize an L, I obtain the soliton energy and also the length scale. And the length scale will be square root of K, this large Coulomb interaction, times the correlation length at which the perturbation becomes relevant. So this is the large parameter by which charge mode is more rigid than neutral modes. And then one can look for the soliton solution explicitly, and what one finds that for a charge mode, we have to have both the charge field and the neutral fields vary simultaneously by the same amount. There is no other way to produce a charge field. So we have all four fields varying. However, from the Sine-Gordon problem, because it's an isotropic, we get two different scales. The charge field varies on a much larger scale than the neutral fields, and so the electron in this case looks like a core in which there is spin and valley pseudospin and a larger dressing which involves some charge mode. So the interpretation of that is basically here. Before I go to finite density case, the interpretation of that is basically here. We have a system with a narrow gap, and because of that, it has high electric susceptibility, like a narrow gap semiconductor. Because of that, if I have an electron which is point-like, electric field will look like this. It will be all aligned with a tube within some length scale, which is determined by effective dielectric constant of the system. And then beyond this length scale, it will spread out. So this length scale is this soliton size that we have there. And then, so once we have a solution for one soliton, we can now look for what happens if we have finite electron density. In this case, we have to look for a solution of the form of soliton lattice, and I won't go through it, but once we have the solution, we can have its energy, and from the energy get compressibility of the system. Now, compressibility of the system is a quantity which is directly observable by Coulomb-Lockheed peak spacing, for instance, and I'll show you a graph later, but the compressibility as a function of electron density behaves like this. It is constant. For one particular value of this delta of the perturbation, it is constant up to the density at which electrons are separated by more than this screening length size, this distance, and then it turns into and then it becomes small, and and what happens is that when electrons are at large distances from each other, they interact just by Coulomb potential, and when they are at small distances, when they're closer than the length scale, they interact by this one-dimensional Coulomb potential, which is linear, and varies linearly as a function of distance. And as a result, there is a change of compressibility at these densities, roughly speaking. And what's interesting is that at this critical density, when electric properties change, electrons, the cores of electrons, spin and valley pseudospin, still don't overlap. So we are still in a sort of classical Wigner-Crystal regime. And only at higher densities at which cores overlap, exchange and quantum fluctuations will turn on, and the system, and we'll have to think about the system quantum mechanically. And yes.
And then you renormalize potential for other excitations, you find out that they grow. And basically you produce a semiconductor band structure but for a solid one. Is it the idea?
More or less. Yeah, as you said, I start with free charges and then renormalize. Yeah, right.
So this reference to pi, my first one basically, start with pi equals to infinity, okay, free charge mode.
Right. And that's because the gap is small, it stops at, you know, it turns into from metal to the insulate at large length scale, and because of that, this infinity doesn't turn to one but to a large number.
Right. So it's like two dimensional, I'm guessing, very
much. Yeah, it's like right. It's like in this yeah. problem. Right. Mm-hmm. So I mean this is a schematic of how the Coulomb block, what we expect for the Coulomb blockade case, Coulomb blockade measurement in this case. So if I have a density which is exactly at half filling, then I will observe, and I vary magnetic field, I will observe a gap as a extremely large peak spacing, which will vary as a function of magnetic field as this power law. And now what's interesting here is that the bare value of the gap, the would-be gap in the non-interacting case, is known explicitly because it is just, you know, function of the tube radius and the flux quantum that I apply through the tube, right? So I can, in principle, if I measure the real gap and compare it with the bare gap, which is known without any fitting parameters, this will be a direct measure of the interaction in the system. And as I said, this compressibility as a function of density becoming large as we deplete the system turns into the change of the peak spacing, which is peaks which are equally spaced here and become more dense as we approach the low density case, the low density regime. So this is basically so this is basically the summary. We presented some theory of what the nanotube looks like near half filling in the presence of a narrow gap induced externally, assuming that this narrow gap is larger than intrinsic gap, which is due to electron interactions or due to Pyrrhus instability or due to some other effects. And there are reasons to believe that this intrinsic gap is small, so probably there is a range in which these results are meaningful. And so in that case, the results are that there is a power law for the energy gap, which is universal and equal 4/5 in the limit when the Coulomb interaction is large. And then there is a compressibility because of the large length for the 1D to 3D crossover, there is a critical density at which relatively large critical density at which compressibility changes from the one for metallic rod to the one for Wigner crystal. And then now going back to this problem I started with, the Tauless pump problem, we can use these results to estimate the effect of the interaction on the energy gaps in the periodic potential. One basically can show by simple manipulations with the Hamiltonian that this formula, the formula for the energy gap, the real energy gap is a function of bare gap, can be directly applied there, except that we should, instead of the bare gap delta, we should just use the gap calculated for free electrons using this any of the approaches that I was discussing. So the oscillations as a function of Bessel function oscillations and vanishing at particular values of the field amplitude, all that will be preserved. The only difference will be that there will be some enhancement of the gap due to interactions and a power law as a function of the amplitude. Yes, that's all. Thank you.
The solitons that you calculate, they are interacting?
Yes.
So the solution that you obtained was for one soliton?
I was showing solution for one soliton. I didn't show the calculation solution of soliton lattice, but what you do is that you consider a step like increasing phi and look for minimum of energy, and then you get a solution. You can actually write down in this limit when the interaction, the Coulomb interaction is very large and the problem is an isotropic, it's not hard to work out explicitly what the soliton lattice looks like and its energy, and it's all very simple, but I didn't show it.
So your solitons have spin and
in the core. Right. Mm-hmm.
And so presumably those would be lattice, those would be at some lower.
Right. So,
does and so does the presumably the charge interactions don't have anything to say about that?
Definitely. So, yeah, presumably exchange, like for Wigner crystals, exchange constant is exponential in RS. That's another story. Right. Exponentially small in RS. And yeah, that's another story.
You mentioned the possible application of this as a precision measurement for the charge. How realistic is this? Do you think? Of course.
People are going to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Uh-huh. No, it seems very realistic.
Uh-huh.
Just not. The only problem we found thinking about it is what the background disorder electric field will do it. If the nanotube is on the substrate, then there is some spatially varying electrostatic potential, and of course if it's varying strongly, then probably it will kill it, but even if it varies in such a way that you have chemical potential within the gap, not within the entire tube but only in a fraction of a tube, it still should work, because the parts in which chemical potential is above or below, they will simply not participate in drag. They will be ideal conductors. So current will come in and go out without any difficulty, and in this gapped region, there will be pumping field. So to some extent, the disorder potential fluctuations up to the gap should probably be okay.
And you discussed that interactions do not destroy the exact quantization, but they just renormalize the parameters.
Right. Actually, in some sense, they help because they enhance the gaps.
Enhance the gap.
Right.
So there are no effects that would sort of cause some kind of decoherence. I mean, sort of, yeah. I mean, just some small.
Yeah. Not anything we noticed so far.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No more questions. So let's thank all the speakers and all the special speakers.